All right, and it now gives me great pleasure to introduce Bob R. from Orchid.
Hi, Bob Alcoholic. Well, y'all, this is a first for me. So bear with me, but thank you, Louisa, and I just appreciate, you know, at first I didn't know what to say. But you know what, it's truly an honor, you know, for you to pick me to try to share my story with you. And, you know, my hope is that you all at least get a smile out of it or maybe a little something from me. I'll start out by giving you my sobriety date. It's December 2nd of 2024. So I've got just over a year. And that's actually just a couple of weeks before what I've learned is now my belly button birthday. So I just turned 77 years old. So I found sobriety just a little bit down the road, you know, compared to a lot. But I'm telling you, it is such a pleasure to be here. So a little bit about my story. I've been married four times, you know that. And you know, you can kind of get away with blaming somebody else for a couple. And I'll tell you, the really good news is that I'm engaged to get married a fifth time. And I'm sober. Yeah. You know, so that's... and you know, I got to make this one right. This one, you know, I mean, come on, let's be real. I'm probably only got one or two more shots at it. Boy, I hope this isn't getting recorded. And she said that she was really curious about what I was going to talk about tonight, too. But with my, you know, I had a very strict upbringing, you know. I have two older brothers. My dad was career Air Force pilot. So I had a very structured childhood. I had two older brothers. My oldest brother, you know, was somewhat of a mess-up kind of a guy. And then my second oldest brother was perfect. And boy, I mean, got straight A's, didn't have to study, got appointed to the Coast Guard Academy. I come along, and I'm a lot like my oldest brother. So I really couldn't hardly do anything right at home. And I think that really affected me. You know, now that I'm sober and I look back at my life a way that I never did before, I'm starting to see character traits that affected me when my drinking really kicked into gear. And I think one of them was that I really just kind of hid my emotions and couldn't, always just tried to stay away from my dad. And anyway, so I got into high school, and of course my dad wanted me more like my brother Chris. And boy, whatever you do, don't turn out like your brother Bill. And boy, I was a lot like my brother Bill. And but I got good in athletics in high school. I ran track, and my dad wouldn't even come to a track meet. He said, you know what, you can run as fast as the wind, but it's not gonna get you into college, you're not gonna ever be anything, you can't do anything. Which is that, but then I got good enough to where I started getting offers for college. Dad started coming to track meets. So, but anyway, so I went away to college, and I you know, I'm a product of the 60s, and so when I was in college, it was the first draft. And sure enough, boy, my birthday came up. I mean, they were coming to get me and put me in the Army. And so I wound up, my dad, like I said, was career Air Force pilot. He knew some people, and I wound up avoiding the Army, but I got into the National Guard. And you know, what's interesting about that story is that when I was in college, and this is in the late 60s, long before most of you were around, but you know, they were marching on Washington, peace marching, you know, about the war. And when I was in college, you know, I wasn't really political about anything. I didn't want to go in the Army, and, you know, we didn't really care for the war in Vietnam, but we went down to the peace protests, honestly, me and my roommates, to find girls. hey, you know, the 60s, free love, sex, drugs, alcohol. I mean, boy, you want to find some girls, go down to one of those peace marches. Well, a little story about the peace marches is that I'm out of college now. I'm in the National Guard. And all of a sudden, we're activated to go down into Washington, D.C. and guard federal buildings from all these peaceful, half-stone, beautiful girls. You know, but there I am just a year or so later from just being in college and going down there. Now I'm in uniform. I'm in the National Guard. And I mean, and these were not violent demonstrations. These were more like love-ins. I mean, they were taking these kids down to the D.C. Armory, and they were having sex right in front of everybody and all the National Guard. And you see, and we were just told to stand there at attention. I mean, don't do anything, you guys. Just be there. And I'm telling you, this pretty girl came up to me, nose to nose, little short skirt on. Hey there, soldier. You having a good day? And I'm just standing there. Boy, and all of a sudden I hear the trickle on my boots. And I look down and she's looking at me smiling and then just stepped back and walked away. And you know, we couldn't do anything. I mean, we just stood there, but she peed on my boots, smiling in my face the whole time. Now, boy, when you're going, you know, you go a year from going down there to find girls to stand there and having this gal in front of me, and I thought, what is going on with my life? But that's sort of where the drinking started. Wasn't in college, but it was when I got into the service. And what I discovered, and you see, when I was younger, I drank to want to fit in like a lot of us did, you know, but I discovered early on that we didn't go out and drink when I was in the service just to have a couple of beers and feel a little better. We went out to get drunk. And so that was sort of my first experience with drinking to get drunk. It was in the military. But then again, it wasn't too awfully bad. I mean, you know, when I was an airman, we'd go to the airman's club. And back in those days, and we're talking way back, you guys, 60s, 70s, they had 3.2 beer. Well, that's not even beer. But when I got my third stripe, went to the NCO club, that's where the liquor was and everything else. So I did some drinking in the service, and I wound up, when I got out of the National Guard, I became a police officer in my early 20s. Don't panic anybody, it was a long, long time ago. We're talking about, this was so long ago that the police cars had the little round domes on top. Kind of like Car 54, where are you? But, you know, and that was quite an experience for me because that's when I learned about, at age of about 23, I was working with an old guy, a partner, called him Pappy, had white hair, nice guy, and he drove me up this dirt road one night when we were working and to this farm, and he hops out of the car and meets a guy, and they go into the barn, and Pappy comes out with a mayonnaise jar of clear liquid, put it in the trunk. I said, hey, what's going on? He said, hey, after work. Well, boy, I'll tell you what, that was moonshine, white lightning. I mean, this stuff was so potent, it would burn the hair on your nose, just smelling it. And we got off work at 2 in the morning and went to the maintenance yard, and we started, these guys started hitting this moonshine and having a cold beer. I went, holy cow, man, this isn't the Airman's Club anymore. This is the real deal. And you see, that can start a pattern when you, and by the way, in my day, we caught kids with beer. We did not make them pour it out. We put it in the trunk, anything that wasn't open, because that was for after work. But for me, don't anybody kid yourselves that our alcoholics out there wearing a badge. Because, you know, I hate to say that you go out there and arrest somebody for a DUI for having one too many beers, and then at 2 in the morning you are drinking moonshine and chasing it with beers and then driving home. Now, that doesn't seem quite right, but you know what? Sometimes that's just life. So I left the police department and, you know, I didn't really have, I mean, I drank on the weekends, you know, but I didn't have a real drinking problem, but it was setting a pattern. for me as far as this drinking, two or three in the morning, and then going home, going to bed, and getting up, going to work. But a little bit later on in my life, I had this opportunity to work for a rock and roll band. Drove the tour bus. I'd tell you a story. You know how boring that must have been? Well, really, it really wasn't. I drove for these guys. And, you know, there were some alcohol problems, for sure. And actually, but for me, it was really like when we had shows in Canada. Had to get a little creative getting that bus through customs. And not because maybe we're trying to stash drugs. Really, rock and roll band? You know, we're just trying maybe to smuggle some Canadian whiskey into Canada. No, it was marijuana and stuff. And I just got creative. After one or two trips back and forth across the border, figured out just where you could hide what you didn't want to have found. But my real experience there with a rock and roll band, we had a full-blown alcoholic who was the principal, one of the principals of this of the band. And, you know, he had a problem, but you never considered him an alcoholic. You know, he just had a problem. And it would get so bad that we go out for maybe 4 or 5 weeks, and they'd go home for a week or two, and then we'd go back out on tour. And he got so bad in the first half of the tour that it was decided that we weren't going to let him be around alcohol anymore. Yeah, well, you know how in the rooms they have the little miniatures? Well, what he would do is that he would load up all the miniatures out of the bar in the room, and he'd put them in his bag, and he'd bring them onto the bus. And, you know, I'm not judging about his drinking, but you see, I'm the bus driver. You can't flush those things down a toilet in the tour bus. The little bottles just don't work. And they clog everything up, and I grab them, you can't be doing this, man. You can't be bringing, you got to figure out some other way because you're clogging up my toilet all the time. And of course, he even denied that it was him. And it was just a real shame because during that process, I didn't really understand what a full-blown alcoholic was. And even though I was working with one, and it would get so bad that the guy, they'd have to cut his mic off during a show and somebody else in the shadows would sing or somebody else would be playing his guitar. And we just, we just dealt with it. And looking back on it, and I've learned since that, and that this band is still touring, is that he's supposedly been clean and sober now for 5 or 6 years. And I wish I had known him then instead of now. But, in those days, it was always like, another thing is they used to talk about me and say, boy, Bob can really hold his liquor. Well, when you think about it, that's a big red flag. Yeah. Why can I hold my liquor so well? Well, because I drink so damn much, I guess. And then it was kind of like, yeah, fix me another drink, man. I'm the one that, I can't get drunk. And those days working with that band, and girls, they attract a lot of girls. A lot of girls want to get to know somebody in the band, and it is not true that they try to go through the bus driver. Yeah, they did. I think maybe I was married to my second wife when I was out on tour, but I don't think that could have had anything to do with it. I do have them in my head. I ignore some of these exes of mine are still alive. But, I'm sure they have a lot of fun stories about me, too. But what happened with me, and so and I went on through my life, and I've, since then, I've had owned my own business. I got into banking, and had myself a career, and I was a high-functioning alcoholic. And also at the same time, a dry drunk. I like a lot of people, I drink on the weekends, and then sometimes, then it would go, middle of the week. And then, I'd have something to drink just about every day by the time I retired. But, you know, not, I never drank in, when I was driving. I never drank before I drove. But what happened when I was driving the tour bus is that I'd drive all night, and we'd roll into a hotel, and these guys would all go to bed, and I'd get a six-pack, and I'd sit down out, maybe even by the pool at 8 in the morning, and down a six-pack to go to bed. See, and that's where that morning drinking, because that's what really was my downfall. Because later on, so it got easy for me to drink in the morning, you know? And then later on in my life, my wife passed away after a very short illness. And that's when my problems really set in, because I started isolating myself. And that's when I started drinking. And all of a sudden, it wasn't so bad, except I wouldn't open a cold beer at 8 in the morning when I did. When I was driving the tour bus, it was vodka. And I found myself, but you know, I was one of those guys, because I could quit. You know, I'd quit, maybe stop drinking for a year, year and a half, 2 years. But something, when I'd get started, I couldn't stop. And it was vodka was my poison. And so I isolated myself and I started drinking all the time. And that's when I had a problem. But then when I got into a little bit of a relationship or started having people come around is when I started hiding it. You see, because yeah, you know, let's have a margarita, and I'd slip into my closet, take a couple of slugs of either vodka or tequila or whatever I had, and then just go back out and keep partying. So that's when I really started kidding myself and hiding it from everybody around me. And I'm the guy that thought, okay, you know, I won't start until 9 in the morning. You know, I won't have my first drink. And that changed to whenever I got up. And I justified it every way that you can imagine. Okay, I'll only slip in there and take a couple of slugs like every 2 hours. That way I can maintain all day. And then, of course, that all went down. And honestly, when I really hit my rock bottom was when I went in there to have a slug of my vodka, and it was all gone. And I just, oh, really? Because the best thing for me when I'm hiding my liquor, you know, when they were all in the round bottles, then they got into the rectangle. They're easy to slide up onto a shelf or hide, you know, in some books in those round bottles. Yeah. Boy, when they made those rectangular bottles. But anyway, and then I realized that I really, really needed some help. And that I had to stop this nonsense. I mean, I'm 76 years old. What am I doing in my closet, you know? Drinking back in the morning. I mean, you know, you gotta do something, and you can't do it on your own. So I had a plan that, okay, I gotta get to a meeting. And my girlfriend's familiar with AA. Many years ago, she'd been to some meetings. She said, you gotta do something. Because she found an empty bottle. Said, I knew something was going on. You've heard that before. Okay, now it all makes sense. You know, because I always thought I was a clever drinker. And, geez, and I thought, when I got drunk, I was just more fun to be around. But obviously, everybody else was starting to notice that that was not the case. And so I decided, okay, I got a plan. I need to come. I'll go to an AA meeting. And maybe all that I need to do is go to a meeting every once in a while, when I'm maybe feeling that urge that I need to drink, because I know that once I get started, I can't stop. But maybe an occasional meeting, like, oh, that's right, Bob. You know, you don't want to do that. So I thought, okay, I'm going to go to a meeting and see how that goes, and then I just go to a meeting every once in a while when I feel the urge to drink. And, you know, that really didn't work out, because I went to my very first meeting, and, man, they had me. You know, I didn't even know what to expect. But that hour and 10 minutes was an incredible experience. I mean, first of all, everybody and a bunch of you in this room that were there just over a year ago, but boy, before that hour was over, I had the big book, I had phone numbers, the meeting schedule had already been put in my phone. I mean, I didn't have a choice. I was already going to a meeting the very next night. So what happened to this? Every once in a while, I just pop in, hey, you guys, you know, get a little inspiration and not drink. No. And ever since that day, this has been quite an incredible experience. I can't begin to tell you how a guy my age can have a new, a complete awakening. You know, you think that you get in your mid-70s, and I've shared that I thought maybe I was getting a little of the dementia, you know, because it's running my family a little bit, and so maybe that's all it is. That's not what it was. I was just drunk. You know, I'm an alcoholic. Man, once I didn't drink, you know, for a while, I started, no, man, you know, you're not losing it. You're just an alcoholic. And it was crazy because the very first time that I said that out loud at my very first meeting, I heard myself say it, and it was just like a relief for some reason. I still remember that very first time very, very clearly that, boy, yeah. You know, and I walked away from my first meeting understanding that I am an alcoholic and that it wasn't going to be a once a week kind of thing. And so I started going to the meetings, and I'm telling you, it's been 5-6 meetings a week now for just over a year. And then I picked up these commitments, and some of you have heard me call Coffee Bob. But you know, commitments are the whole thing too for me. Whether it's being a timekeeper, whether it's just making coffee, it gets me to meetings because we've all had that feeling, I just don't want to go tonight, kind of like tonight. I'll drink to that. But my commitments are just, you see, when you get older, you lose your dexterity. I'm not that thirsty. So, fast forwarding along, thanks, Chris. And honestly, the first time that I've spoken for more than 3 or 4 or 5 minutes was last week, and last Saturday night was a birthday meeting. And, you know, they're celebrating my 1 year of sobriety. And I didn't think that was going to be a real big deal. It's a big deal. It's just really a big deal to me. And I'm sitting on a panel with two people that between them have 60 years of sobriety last Saturday night. I'm sitting up there, I'm the oldest guy in the room. I got 1 year of sobriety, and I'm thinking, you know, should you just feel really good about this? But you know, I did. Because you know what? That's another message. It truly is that we can do this no matter how old we are, no matter what our background is. And you know what? You can get a new beginning for your life. And that's what this has been for me. And you know, I'm just in the beginnings of this. And, you know, and I just turned 77 years old, and I'm so looking for my second year of sobriety. And, you know, and I'm not the only one. This gal that thinks I'm going to marry her, she has... Some of you met her. You know, I didn't do too bad. Anyway, she's... Yeah, I don't know if it's supposed to be this year. And we've been together 8 years, so this isn't just something that's just happened. But you know, it's kind of time for me to kind of get off the pot, and I'm just not ready to get off the pot. And I'm just really busy in AA. You know, I mean, how are we going to find the time? You know, and it would have been okay. You know, she said, "Yeah, we would just go do a quick ceremony, you know, down on the beach." And I said, "Yeah, boy, yeah, we'll just get an officiator, and we'll just go down the beach." No. This beach thing has turned into a full-blown, she wants a wedding, not just getting married on the beach. And all the people that, you know, we got to get a hold of so-and-so. And holy cow, we're going to have to get a wedding planner. And I'm going, what? And she knows this is my fifth time around. I mean, but enough about any of that. But this is the getting back my sobriety. She is so appreciative, and she's been so supportive, and so is everybody else in my family. And they have noticed a big, big difference in me over this last year, because what I did is that I would just avoid, you know, I'd avoid the family functions if I could, because I didn't want to be drinking, you know, and in front of all of them. And so I didn't go to a lot of the functions, and I've been to every one of them. As a matter of fact, I've gone the opposite way, and I've encouraged her and us to visit and be with family. A lot of family issues going on that now I can be present and help her with, because we got health issues and Alzheimer's and stuff going on in her family, and she, you know, and I can help, and I wouldn't have been able to help a year ago. And it's because of what I'm learning in this program and learning how to be present for people. Just sitting there, you know, half drunk or drunk, is not being present. And everybody can tell that I'm present now, and they're relying on me. And I welcome that, you know, I really do. So it's a whole, for me to try to let you know how much of a different person I am now than I was just a year or two ago, or than I was 10 or 20 years ago, is just amazing for me. And some folks in this past year that know me tell me stuff about, boy, Bob, and it's just come up very recently, but we just noticed a difference in you, you know, a clarity in your eyes and a demeanor about you, and it comes up from time to time. But going back to my first meeting, you know, I was kind of shell-shocked, and I thought, okay, this is going to be all right. And it was maybe a week, 2 weeks later, I'm at breakfast at Jack's, an old Orcutt. I walk in the door with my fiancé, and all of a sudden this not-so-quiet voice says, "Hey, Bob!" I look up, boy, and there he sat, and I said, "Hey, how you doing?" She says, "Who's that?" And I said, "I don't know his name." but he's an AA. She said, "He is." And I said, "Yeah, but I don't remember his name." You know, because I shook his hand. And then I thought to myself, these guys must be everywhere. but that was Marcus. And you know what? He's just been that. Yes, then if he didn't figure that out. And you know what? But he's just been so true that way. And everybody in this program that I come in contact with are that genuine. And it was that way that first night. And it's that way every single night that I come to a meeting. And everybody that I interact with. And you know, I don't feel that I need to come to an AA meeting 5-6 times a week as much as now I want to. And what's happened is that I used to come into an AA meeting, and it's my safe place. And it truly is, because it's non-judgment, and everybody's so true and so friendly. And life's not perfect. You know, we hear the shares. I mean, I have bad days. We all do. But in sobriety, we're learning how to deal with them. And something that I read is that outside of my safe place now is getting to be a bigger and bigger circle. It's outside of AA. I'm feeling more safe and comfortable with myself. And that's all, that's what it's all about. And I did read something. You know, you guys, I'm one of these guys, I Googled what to do when you've been asked to be the speaker in your first AA meeting. You can actually Google that. I mean, listen, man, I was looking for help. And so I'm Googling all this stuff, and they're telling me, you know, to tell your story about, you know, your upbringing and then what your life was like and all that. And then it said to share about how you are now. And one of the things that it came across was this Rule 62. You know, I'd never heard of Rule 62. Rule 62 is pretty simple. It's just that don't take yourself too damn seriously. And you know, I remind myself of that. And ever since I read that, just a couple of days ago. And so for me, just not to take myself too seriously, and any advice that I have, get a good sponsor. I'm telling you, my relationship with my sponsor is just critical for me now to proceed through. I got a lot of steps to go through. I mean, I'm a newcomer, 77-year-old newcomer. But I've got a lot of work to do, but I'm excited about it. And it's not going to all be peaches and cream. And I know life doesn't just change. You know, you don't come into AA and come into this program and all your problems go away. They absolutely do not. We all still have those same problems, but just getting the tools. And the tools are there. If we pick them up and use them, we learn them. They're all in the book. I brought the book just in case the deal showed up. but I'm, you know, and that's really about all that I have to share with you. tonight as far as my journey through Alcoholics Anonymous, how it has affected my life, and how grateful I am, you know, to be here tonight. Thanks. I dreaded it. They did tell me that I'd feel a lot better when it was over. but I do hope that maybe a little something, if not a smile from you, or maybe something about my experience will have an effect. If nothing else, don't forget Rule 62.
All right, let's give Bob another round of applause.